So we have a New Year's Day, a new year and a new day, and looking to fresh beginnings. It was a little funny to go back and look at my beginnings with understanding the philosophy of Science of Mind. And many of you have heard my story, but some of you have not, so it's a fresh opportunity for me to share how I got here. And it's been 30 years. It just is amazing to me that it was 30 years ago that I was introduced to the book You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay. And how my life has changed in 30 years. I was 35 years old at the time. I'm 64 now. And this experience of change has been going on and continuing to go on. It wasn't like there was a threshold, I stepped over it, and then everything was different. It was like there was one step and another step and another gentle step and another gentle step and some rather radically not so gentle steps. And eventually, life became radically different than it had been before. But the threshold that I'm going to talk about today that introduced me to Louise Hay was the decision to leave my first marriage. I had spent 6 years with my first husband, and during the time of those 6 years, I was crying or frightened a goodly part of the time. It was not a positive experience, is one way to put it. And I don't want to go into the gory details. That's not necessary. But there came a time when I said to myself, I don't think much of myself, but I know I deserve better than this. And that decision set me off on a completely different trajectory in my life. And what I discovered is that the universe supports a good decision. And so it took me almost 6 months to gather the resources to leave that experience, and including making the decision, because my life had been threatened. I said I would rather die than continue to live like this. And so I gathered resources. I gathered psychological resources and pharmaceutical resources, antidepressants, and legal resources for the necessary protection. And I made a move. And I was scared out of my mind, but I developed the courage to make a different choice. Now, I got out of that situation. And I moved from a beautiful big house on a hill in Colorado overlooking Pikes Peak. I moved to a studio apartment with a mattress on the floor. And I felt like I was back in college. But I felt safe in that house. And last night I saw the musical Matilda at the Kennedy Center. And I never schedule something like that on the night before a talk, ever. But somehow my brain warped and I got the dates mixed up, and I paid $127 for the ticket, so I wasn't going to not go. And I thought, okay, I'm going to trust that there's always something in it for me. If I go, there'll be a reason that I went. And when I listened to the music, I came across a song called My House. And in it, the young teacher is talking about the fact that she lives in a shack. And she finally brings her genius young student, who's being sorely abused at home, to visit her in her shack. And the girl looks around and says, "Are you poor?" And she said, "Yes," but then she sings this song. And she said, "This roof keeps me dry when the rain falls. This door helps to keep the cold at bay. On this floor, I can stand on my own two feet. And ultimately, she says, it isn't much, but it's enough for me. And what happened to me when I moved into that tiny apartment was that I felt safe for the first time in years. And I was able to relax. I still felt unworthy. I felt really guilty because I'd broken one of the cardinal rules. You don't get divorced was one of the cardinal rules. I felt unworthy still. I felt shame for not having been able to succeed at this challenge of loving my husband. So my spirits weren't high, but I felt safe, which was huge at the time. And the very next day, two things happened. The first was I went to see my psychologist, and my husband had been to see him already, and he started telling me all the ways I needed to take care of my husband because he was worse off than I was, and I fired him. It was such another good decision. Yes. And later that day, I went to a divorce support group at Kaiser Permanente. And I met this woman. And I was in this space where I was very depressed. I was very sad. I was very confused. But I met this woman who decided she was going to be my best friend. And she was not sad. She was not confused. She was very direct. And she started calling me like every other day and inviting me to do things. And she had enough energy for both of us. So I started doing things with her. And one of the very first things she told me is that she wanted to try out some churches, that she hadn't gone to church in a long time, and she was ready to make a change. And I said, oh, boy, I haven't been at a church in 20 years. And I'm at best an agnostic. I think I'm an atheist. And she said, well, it'll be different. At least come with me. And I said, okay. And so we went to a couple of churches, and I felt kind of uncomfortable, but it was okay. My friend was there. It was only a trial. And then this one magical day, we went to a study group that was studying Louise Hay. That used You Can Heal Your Life, this rainbow copy of You Can Heal Your Life, as its main focus. And every week they read a meditation from You Can Heal Your Life, and every week they talked about what Louise Hay teaches and gave us the exercises and the affirmations and all of the information about You Can Heal Your Life and what that represents. And it was amazing. From the first day I went there, I said, I'm going to come back here every week. And my friend didn't join. She wasn't as turned on as I was, but her mission was kind of supported. She found me the place I needed to be. And she continued to search all around, and she came sometimes to where I was. It was right around the corner from her house. It was an hour's drive on Sunday morning for me. But it was so worth it, because we sang these positive songs, and we studied these positive ideas. And Louise Hay said, you're good. You're worthy. Your life is meaningful. And there are things about you that are special and different, and honor them. Don't be afraid of them. Honor them. And I was so moved. I was so moved. And before too long, maybe a year and a half, I was talking to this woman named Michelle Medrano, who has since become a rather powerful, potent science of mind minister with a wonderful center in Arizona that Reverend Sunday used to work at. Reverend Sunday was a staff minister at Reverend Michelle's ministry after she left here. Michelle, who was then not even a practitioner, she'd just taken a couple of science of mind classes, she said to me, you know, if you like Louise Hay, you ought to check out Mile High Church, which is right down the street, because that's what Louise Hay teaches. And I had never actually read the description at the back of Science of Mind, at the back of You Can Heal Your Life, where Louise Hay talks about her experience with Science of Mind and healing the cancer that she had. And so I decided to go. And the Sunday I went with my husband, at the time, my second husband, who was very good to me, who always said he was really grateful to my first husband because anything he did was going to be good as far as I was concerned. So he and I went to this Science of Mind service, and we were totally blown away. Mile High Church was the biggest church in the movement at that time, and there were hundreds of people in this glorious sanctuary, and the music, they had a choir. It was incredible. And Dr. Fred Vogt was there, and he talked about Science of Mind and starting the Science of Mind classes in a couple of weeks. And if we were interested in the Science of Mind classes, he was going to give a lecture that evening to introduce the details about the classes that were being offered and what Science of Mind was all about. And I thought, well, that's fortuitous. And so we drove an hour to get there. We drove an hour home. We had lunch. We hung around for an hour, and then we drove up an hour back and listened to that talk. And I said, I'm going to take those classes. It's amazing. And I thought, it's a little daunting. You know, an hour on Sunday morning is more like an hour and a half on rush hour days. But I'm going to take those classes because this is really important to me. And then somebody else from the study group said to me, well, if you want to take Science of Mind classes, there's a church 10 minutes from your house that has a young female minister. And I said, a young female minister? And I'd grown up in a church that had no female leaders. And I thought, interesting. And I walked into that church and I was home. And I was there every Sunday for the next 4.5 years while I took every class she offered and got my practitioner license, and then moved here. And I was already a practitioner when I moved to Northern Virginia. But the experience that I had was so unbelievably perfect. And 3 weeks into that class that I started taking with Reverend Marianne, she walked up to me during the break, and she said to me, you're a mystic, and you don't know it, but you need to know what to do with it. And here, in the Science of Mind textbook, is the chapter on what the mystics have taught, which will tell you who you are and what you're here to do. And it was yet another threshold, another radical change of understanding who I was and what I was here to do. It was just so awesome. And that whole progression kept taking place. And I kept attracting a different experience. I attracted a husband who was kind and good to me, who understood me because he'd been in a relationship where he used to come to work with scratches down his face and threats and difficulties from home. He knew what it was like. He wasn't afraid of her. He was afraid that he would hurt her if he retaliated for what she did to him. But he understood what it meant to be in a place where you're not treated kindly. And his intention was to be with me in a kind and gentle way. And he always was. It was amazing in the years we had together. And ultimately, we moved to Virginia, and 2 years later, he made his transition. Suddenly, at age 39, it was kind of a surprise. which was yet another transition that I experienced. So there have been many places where I needed the information and the support that I began to get from You Can Heal Your Life. And so I want to share some of the ideas that Louise Hay shared and some of the ways it touched me during this time that was so important to me. And so I want to begin with this little exercise on letting go. It says, as you hear this, take a deep breath. And as you exhale, allow all the tension to leave your body. Let your scalp and your forehead and your face relax. You do not need to be tense. Let your tongue and your throat and your shoulders relax. You can sit here with relaxed hands and arms. Do this now. Let your back and your abdomen and your pelvis relax. Let your breathing be at peace as you relax your legs and feet. Is there a big change in your body since you began? Notice how much you hold on. If you're doing it with your body, you are doing it with your mind. In this relaxed, comfortable position, say to yourself, I am willing to let go. I release, I let go. I release all tension. I release all fear. I release all anger. I release all guilt. I release all sadness. I let go of all old limitations. I let go, and I am at peace. I am at peace with myself. I am at peace with the process of life. I am safe. So just take a deep breath. And notice what it felt like to be giving permission to relax. In my life, I needed permission to relax. I always felt like I had something to prove. I always felt like I wasn't good enough. That I had to be motivated and work hard and get straight A's and do things that were beyond what anybody else was asking. I was asking of myself. And Louise Hay gave me permission to relax and to feel safe within myself. And that exercise goes on to say, do this exercise 2 or 3 times. And at that time, I got an audio tape of Louise Hay's affirmations and exercises. And I must have listened to that tape 1,000 times. And it helped me learn to relax. I learned to be at peace. I learned to get there easily when I breathed and relaxed. I found that place of peace. And I found there were some triggers in the things that she suggested. For example, I've heard many, many other people do relaxation exercises, but Louise is the only person I've ever heard say, let your tongue relax. And I notice that when I'm getting ready to sleep, if I say, let my tongue relax, there's always a change. Maybe other parts of my body are fairly relaxed, but my tongue wasn't relaxed. And so I still do that. And when I settle down to do a meditation, I always say, let your tongue relax. And I take a deep breath, and it shifts my energy. So you may find for yourself that as you listen to relaxation exercises, that there are certain parts of you that remain tense even when the rest of you seems to relax. And the other thing that I've become aware of is that relaxation is not like an on-off switch. It's more like a dimmer switch with a million different places. And there's always another level, another deeper space of letting go, of releasing the rules. Releasing the rules that you live by. And at least questioning the rules. You know, so many of the rules that we live by really help us. Like following, being on the right side of the road in the U.S. and driving on the left side of the road in the U.K. If you get those mixed up, you don't last very long. Those rules are really helpful. You know, there are many rules that we were taught that were really helpful. And there are a few rules that are kind of neutral, and there are some rules that are sort of damaging. Like one of the rules I accepted was that I was pretty much responsible for everybody else, and responsible for making everything work for everybody. And I remember the first time I went to see a psychologist, he said, "You have a right to be happy." And I said, "No, I don't." And nowadays it seems bizarre that I would have said that. But at that point, it was true for me. I didn't believe I had a right to be happy. And I said back to him in that moment, "If you told me I had a responsibility to be happy, I would be more likely to pursue it." And so those were some rules that I had absorbed that I wasn't aware of. They just ran me. And what Louise says in this book is awareness is the first step in making changes. Until you're aware you're doing something, you can't change it. And so becoming aware is so important. Becoming conscious. And then, she says, allow yourself to be willing to change. Because even if you're aware, if you're not willing to change, you can't change it. So the meditation, I love the meditations in these books, this book. And the one that really struck me to follow the relaxation exercise that she did is this one on page 205. In the infinity of life where I am, all is perfect, whole, and complete. Each one of us, myself included, experiences the richness and fullness of life in ways that are meaningful to us. I now look at the past with love and choose to learn from my experiences. There is no right or wrong or good or bad. The past is over and done. There is only the experience of the moment. I love myself for bringing myself through this past into this present moment. I share what and who I am, for I know we are all one in spirit. All is well in my world. And when I would read things like that, it would give me hope. Hope that things could change. Hope that I could feel different. Hope that I could really come to the understanding that all is perfect, whole, and complete in the infinity of life where I am. And I began to develop the philosophy I live in now, where I believe myself to be both and, not either or. I am infinite and finite now. I am time-bound and eternal now. I am physical and non-physical now. It's not one or the other. You come and be physical and then you go back and be non-physical. No. The wholeness is here right now. I am whole right now. I am all of it right now. And because I am all of it right now, as Louise tells us, there is always that within us that knows. The eternal, infinite part of us knows how to guide us, knows how to direct us, if we just learn to relax and listen and be with that presence. It's always there. There is never a time when we are alone. We are always loved, supported, and supplied in every moment of every day, no matter what, no matter what's going on. There is a blessing in this moment. We don't have to resist the moment. And Louise talks in this book, although she doesn't use the phrase that I came across. She talks about how we are meaning givers. Thoughts have no power over us unless we give in to them. Thoughts are only words strung together, she said. They have no meaning whatsoever. Only we give meaning to them. And we can choose what sort of meaning we give to them. We can choose to think thoughts that nourish and support us. We are the meaning givers. So we get to look at those rules we've been living and figure out which ones still mean anything in the context of the understanding we now have. And as our understanding expands, our understanding of the meaning expands. And things that we thought were irrelevant in the past, that certainly, you know, when I was an atheist, I thought God was irrelevant. And ultimately, spirit became the most important thing in my life and became the total focus of my life. And that was an amazing shift. But I got to be the meaning maker. I got to decide after my husband made his transition. And I looked at the life we'd been living where both of us were on the road all the time. He was traveling all the way to Europe and back often, and I was traveling the U.S. and Canada teaching classes. And we might see each other for a little while on the weekends, but I was leaving on Sunday and he wasn't getting back till Saturday, and there was so little time. And I thought, the life that I've been living is meaningless. There is a different life for me to live now, and I get to choose differently now, and I did. I chose this life. This life. And so what Louise Hay said was, part of self-acceptance is releasing on other people's opinions, other people's rules, and living by the rules of life that make sense to me. There are beautiful things that I've heard in music. I've always been moved so much by music. And many of you know my license plate on my bright yellow car is You Are Light, You Are L-I-G-H-T. And that originally came from a song I heard at that study group where I was studying Louise Hay. And the refrain of that song says, you are light, yes you are, and that's the real you. You are light, yes you are. Do you know that song? Oh my God.
Yeah. I just started listening to it. I got this years ago from a dear friend.
Yeah.
And she heard this concert with all these different New Thought singers during the 1980s.
Yeah.
You don't hear them too often today.
No.
And I think it's, yes.
Charlie Thweet?
Oh, well, I don't know. Exactly.
Omen?
Oman or Oman Ken and Shanti.
Yeah.
I don't know if Shanti was his wife.
Yeah.
And
it's
listening to
such
it,
an amazing song.
And I gave it to one of my Unity ministers.
Uh-huh.
Because he seemed very receptive to it. I just copied the whole couple of albums.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I can sing that later.
Excuse me. Awesome. Oh, no,
just,
I'm...
That was just so wonderful because it's one of my favorite collections of songs,
yeah.
All these things that these people sang.
Well, just to show the universe supporting a good decision, Because that isn't in my notes. That was something that I just was inspired to say in the moment, and how perfect that that was what I was inspired to say. So that's a perfect place to close, because this whole talk is about just taking the next step, finding a little bit of a thought that feels wrong, a little bit of a rule you're living that doesn't feel right, and figure out what the right rule would feel like. What feels like more love? What feels like more joy? What feels like more freedom? What feels like being kind to myself and others? Those are the kinds of questions I ask myself when I look at the rules I live by now. What feels expansive? One of the things I learned in those years is that I could tell a difference between a thought that felt contractive and a thought that felt expansive, a thought that opened my heart or my mind, or a thought that closed my mind and my heart. And so I encourage you, if you've never read it, to read it. If you have read it and you were inspired by it, to revisit it, because it's a really wonderful summary of what Science of Mind teaches. And it's a wonderful, open-hearted experience of self-love. So I am so grateful to Louise Hay for her example. She's now in her 80, she's in her ninth decade. She's over 80. And I heard her say at her 80th birthday party, "This is going to be my best decade yet." And I just love Louise. So many thanks, Louise. And thank you all for listening.
Yay.